I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land. I would like to extend my respects to all elders, past, present, and future. I would particularly like to acknowledge the Awabakal people and Ngunnawal people on which this podcast was recorded on. I would like to acknowledge that sovereignty has not been ceded. Welcome to the UNLSA podcast. I'm your host, Christy Mullen, and today you're listening to the Careers in Government episode. Joining us is
Sapphire Dawson, who is a legal officer at the Clean Energy Regulator, and we are also joined by Jared Bush, who is an assistant parliamentary counsel at the Office of Parliamentary Counsel.
Thanks, Christy.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start at the very start. You both studied law at the University of Newcastle. What interested you in studying law?
You can go first, Jared, if you want.
If I'm being perfectly honest, it was my mother that put me onto it. I was working in a job where it wasn't very intellectually stimulating, and I needed that bit of an extra challenge. So my mum floated the idea. I said, that's a great idea. I'll give that a go. Loved it, still love it. And it's probably one of the best decisions I've made.
For me, the main reason that I did it was when I think back to being in kindergarten and, you know, they ask you what you want to be when you grow up, I actually drew a little girl with like a little briefcase. And so it's essentially been something I've wanted to do my entire life, which is, I'm very lucky in that I've come through and finally finished and completed it, and followed through on my little kindergarten dream to become a lawyer. I think that I do enjoy it sometimes, and I think I enjoy it all the time. But I'm glad that I did it because, you know, I'm one of the first people in my family to actually, you know, finish year 12 and then go on to actually finish university. So it's exciting just the fact that I completed my law degree, to be honest.
So, Sapphire, you were saying that you always considered yourself to be going into law. At what point did both of you become interested in a career in government?
For me, it was when I was applying for jobs after in my penultimate year. Essentially, I knew that I wasn't really going to cut it in the private sector. So I'd kind of pushed that away as being something that wasn't for me. I did want to go into, say, legal aid or community legal centre type work, but I knew that having, you know, three young children, that wasn't really going to work for me for quite a number of years. So I decided to, you know, just apply to Australian government graduate programs and see where that led me. And I'm just lucky enough that it led me to legal roles.
As for me, in terms of when I decided that I wanted to go into government, I think that was something that I always had a mind towards. So I was always politically minded. I started uni as, you know, starting with a Bachelor of Arts and studying politics and that sort of thing. And I always had a dream of being a diplomat when I was younger. And as I grew older and, you know, as I progressed in the law degree and whatnot, I started to move away from that idea more and more. But I still love the idea of working in government. And it sounds cheesy, but like, helping the Australian people and feeling like I'm making a difference and helping the country, which, you know, that's why I really got into it and what I guess I get out of the job a lot. So, yeah, I don't know, I've kind of always wanted to do this sort of thing.
Fantastic. So you would feel about having to be apolitical in your role?
Before my final year at uni and whatnot, I was very politically minded. As I got closer to, you know, starting a career in government and whatnot, I became more conscious of, you know, the decisions that I made, what I spoke out about, especially on Facebook and whatnot. And particularly since applying for the role and accepting the role, have become completely apolitical, which is at times tough, but it's, you know, it's a requirement of the job. And it's something that I think a lot of people in the APS perhaps might struggle with, but we're all required to do. And I think, for the most part, everyone, you know, gets that part done. So
I think it's very interesting. One of the things that personally I struggle with, I'm not a very political person. Like, it doesn't bother me who's in power or which government that I'm serving, because that's fine. I just wanted, like Jared said, do the best thing for the Australian people or for the portfolio that I'm in. But I think one of the things that was more difficult for me in being apolitical was trying to separate, not separate completely, but trying to ensure that, particularly when I worked in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet and one of their their portfolio agencies is the National Indigenous Australians Agency, just trying to separate my Aboriginality from me being an APS, but also trying to bring my whole self to work. So I was struggling with trying to be apolitical, you know, making sure that you're not speaking out about certain topics or certain things. You're not being too opinionated in the office or just with people generally talking, and you're just trying to do the best that you can. So as an Aboriginal person, I think that was one of the more difficult things that I found, but I found it a lot easier with the political side because it just didn't faze me in the slightest.
I think what Sapphire said there has really hit the nail on the head in terms of having a focus on what's in the best interest of Australia and its people. And that, I think, really helps with remaining apolitical at all times, because that has to be our focus and that is our focus, I believe. So, yeah.
So Sapphire, you were saying that you were working in the National Indigenous Australian Agency before. How did you get to your current role? What was kind of your career pathway to now?
So essentially, I went in to my graduate program, which was 18 months, so four rotations in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. And I went in being like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And I was just so focused on doing all of these really, you know, legal policy roles, doing FOI, doing my 6 months in the commercial law team. And when I went into the commercial law team, that was my first rotation. I was actually speaking to one of the principal lawyers and he was like, no. He was like, don't come in thinking that you can just, you know, be a great lawyer. He was like, it's not about being a great lawyer. It's actually about being a good public servant. So he told me to go and get all of these, he said, go and get a really wide range of experiences. And so I took that advice and it was very helpful because I did my commercial law rotation, a rotation in Office for Women, where I did a lot of event management type situations because we did a really large event. I also did a stint in Cabinet Division. So that gave me an overarching understanding of how, you know, the minister said something, they've made an announcement, and gave me how we actually got to that point. So that was really good and really helpful. And then I did my last rotation in the Environment Branch, so Indigenous Ranges and Indigenous Protected Areas. And it just so happened that these roles at the Clean Energy Regulator came up. I was working and looking after the energy and environment portfolio while I was in Cabinet Division. And so I'd seen some of the things that were coming out in the budget and I was like, I'm going to apply. So I applied for their legal, like it was a bulk round. So I applied for their bulk round and just happened to get the job. And that's how I ended up at the Clean Energy Regulator. I just stuck my neck out. I didn't think that I really had a chance because I was like, I don't really know that much about, you know, renewable energy or ERF projects or anything that the agency really does other than what I'd read on the internet. And yeah, so I was just lucky. And I was lucky enough that I was just like, I'm going to do this and apply for this job for experience. If I don't get it, it's fine.
Pre-council, was that more just an entry level?
So it's an entry level position. It's not a grad program or anything. So OPC is a small agency. They've only got about 100 staff, and about half of them are drafters, so lawyers. And I sort of advertised as like an entry level lawyer position and applied. They flew me down to Canberra for the interview, and here I am. So in the final semester of uni, applied and went down for the interview. So, I've been extremely, extremely lucky. I don't think it's a model that comes up a lot. But it is always worth, if people are watching this and they're looking for tips and whatnot for getting jobs in government, it's always worth keeping an eye out for jobs that aren't necessarily grad programs. Like, grad programs are amazing. And they do give you like a really wide range of experience, as Sapphire has mentioned. So that's a really great way of developing a wide range of skills that are going to be applicable in a range of different positions. So I highly recommend them. But don't always think that grad program's the be-all and end-all. There are other opportunities for you out there.
Also, I'd like to add on to that. So when you're looking for the graduate programs and the entry-level roles, don't just rely on LinkedIn and Seek. There's APS Jobs, which is really good to check at least weekly as you get closer to the crunch time for the end of your degree. And also each state government has their own respective job sites where they will advertise instead of more broadly available on Seek and LinkedIn. What's your favourite part about working for the government?
Personally, when I see a bill get introduced to Parliament and then go through the various stages and become law, the first time that happened, that was pretty cool. Knowing that a bill that I wrote actually ended up getting passed, that was a good feeling. Just the other previous stuff that I've mentioned about, helping Australian people, I guess.
I think my favourite part is the amount of things that you can learn. Like, I really didn't think that in joining the APS that I would know as much that I do now 2.5 years later on. Like, I know how things go from just, ministerial announcements and how they get done. I know how many different programs and divisions and branches and sections that are just working on really, cutting edge things. Like, you would think that, National Indigenous Australians Agency, you're like, yep, okay, they're clearly an agency that deals with Indigenous issues. But they're dealing with Indigenous issues from housing to culture to Indigenous protected areas. And then they're going across state and federal and even sometimes local governments. So I think that's my favourite thing. Even now, like, I didn't do environmental law. I don't know a whole heap about environmental law, but here I am working in the portfolio that deals with environmental and energy issues.
Yeah, I'd back that up. Every time I get a new project, it's not necessarily in the same area of law. It could be in education and then health and then Indigenous affairs. And I'm getting like a wide range. I'm developing my knowledge of the law as it relates to a wide range of Australia's, issues and laws. So it is really interesting to see the variety that comes across the desk.
What's your least favourite part of working in the government?
I might give you a political answer. I found that one of the worst things, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's the the slowness with how some things can occur. And that's not necessarily, it can be personally frustrating, but it's good to know that things are taking their time because it means that there's a level of accountability and that there's also a lot of checking going on and that something's not just being rushed through. So when you send an email and you don't get a response for a week or something like that, it can be a little personally frustrating, but it does mean that the other person is going to give you a much more considered response, which if when you're dealing with national matters, I think is, in the national interest, probably better to be taking the time rather than being rushed. So that would be what I would consider possibly personally the most frustrating part, but like I said, it's probably a good thing. So.
I would second that. Things take 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 years to actually get completely developed to the point where they're actually ready. And it does get frustrating because you put all of this work into it and then it just feels like it kind of goes nowhere. So I agree with the timing. I'd say the other thing is sometimes it gets just a little bit repetitive. So like as a legal officer, I'm looking at FOIs. And sometimes doing just FOIs can be really frustrating and really annoying because you're just doing the same thing over and over again. And it's a little bit changed depending on the subject matter, but overall the process is exactly the same. So that can be a little bit annoying or frustrating, but overall it's quite good and you can move around. If you don't like your job, you can leave, which is the best part.
So you were mentioning that you've had a lot of experience with FOIs. I remember at the start of my administrative law course this semester, David went, make sure you pay attention. A lot of students come back and say to me, I wish I paid more attention in admin law. I do it all the time now. What type of subjects, what type of skills do you wish you paid more attention to during university?
Did you want to start, Gerard?
Sure. The biggest thing for me is statutory interpretation because I literally write the statutes. So first year, LSM, statutory interpretation, all those rules that you learn in LSM are so important. And I feel like it would be not only important in this role, but also in any role as a lawyer to be able to interpret statutes. So make sure you keep those notes. Other subjects that I feel are quite important in my personal role are constitutional law, because the federal government is often, it always has its mind towards constitutionality and whether or not its laws are going to be constitutionally valid. And if you're working in a state government, it would be the same thing, making sure that they're exercising a power under the constitution that's reserved for the states. So if you're going to be working, you know, in a legal role for the government, definitely a good background in constitutional law would be good, I think. And obviously, as David and everyone has said, admin law is important. For me personally, admin law is not as important as the other two things that I've mentioned, but it's definitely important, especially in government roles, yeah.
I would definitely echo statutory interpretation. Even if you're in a policy role, it doesn't delineate either one. The other day I actually had someone ask me how you calculated days. And I was like, oh, actually, there's a provision for that. And I was like,
Interpretation Act.
And they actually just had no clue. And they've been in the government for like nearly 15 years. They were like, I didn't realize that there was an act to interpretate the acts. And I was like, no, oh, there's a meme for that. Which was great. So they learned something new, and I got to use my statutory interpretation skills. But also I did use the adjustum generis rule as well. I've used that multiple times for classes of information, which I really didn't think that would be something that I would be doing on a regular basis. So statutory interpretation, definitely wish I paid more attention to my early years, or did like an additional course if it was available. The other one, for me personally, in my role as a legal officer, admin law. Admin law is everywhere. There's so many decisions that are being made, and they all have review rights, and you just need to really remember the basics. And then definitely constitution law. The amount of times that I've heard Williams in the last couple of months is going to drive me crazy, essentially. But yeah, so definitely admin, definitely constitutional law, and definitely statutory interpretation. I think with the other subjects, you can kind of float on by, or there'll be a textbook available on a shelf somewhere that you can look up the information. Like I've randomly had to do an advice on intellectual property laws, which I thought was a bit weird for an agency that deals with clean energy, like renewable energy and ERF projects. But here we are.
I think it will give you a lot of hope that since you have both graduated, the law school has adjusted kind of the curriculum. So there is more of a statutory interpretation focus in company and in admin now. So as a fifth year, you get that refresher. What about some other type of soft skills? So maybe more so if you're in a policy role, do you wish you had done negotiation competitions or anything like that?
I think doing negotiation comps and stuff like that would help. It'd definitely be beneficial. I think one of the more interesting things that I think that I would have preferred to do is more presenting, because a lot of the time, especially when you're in a policy role, you have like 30 seconds to tell your manager or your band one about this thing that you've got to do. And you just really need to be like, you know, short, sharp, sweet. You have like basically an elevator pitch of whatever you're required to do, whatever the project is on. Because I had a project and she was literally walking to the elevator to leave. And I was like, I have to tell you this because you kind of have to approve it right now. Otherwise I can't start it. I'm sorry that we haven't had more time to, you know, pencil in so I could go through it in a more detailed way, but I basically did that. And as part of the grad program, at least in PM&C, we were required to do a presentation to the senior exec. And essentially you had 15 minutes and it was very full on. So ours was like on data and why the department needs to, you know, do better things with data, essentially. And it was one of the most terrifying experiences. Like I thought I was fine with it. I thought that I was quite good at presenting. You know, I don't use notes. I'm very good at just being like, bang, bang, bang. And no, I was completely blindsided by their questions because I just didn't really know what to do, because I was like, well, they're just people. And I treated them as just people, but they're actually executives. So I wish that I'd done more presenting or, you know, something along those lines.
In terms of soft skills, I'm still trying to think, because in my role, it's a little bit different than working in policy or working in a department. So at OPC, as an agency, like advising Parliament and, you know, that sort of thing, it's quite black and white, in terms of if a department wants to put something into a bill and it's going to be unconstitutional, we have to put the foot down and say no. And then if it's not unconstitutional, then we have to follow the instructions and put it in. So for us, negotiation isn't necessarily, like for us personally, isn't necessarily the most helpful skill, but it would be very important in other roles, particularly in policy, I feel, because I feel like we're the type of people that puts policy people in the position where they have to come to a creative solution or negotiate and whatnot. The one thing that I have noted throughout my time at OPC is communication skills are important. Communicating an idea in a way that's not, it doesn't come across as abrasive. So even though we're telling them, you know, even though we might be telling a department that they can't put something into a bill because of the constitution, we have to phrase it in a way that's, you know, not outright no, but it's, you know, quite professional and formal and gets the message across without being impolite. So just being political, I guess, being, you know, savvy and, yeah, professional.
Professional is a good one. And finally, do you have any tips for the application processes and what type of things that you think the APS are looking for and that students can do to help themselves stand out?
So one of the things that I would say is speak to someone who's actually applied, because I look back on my initial application to my graduate program and I'm like, I don't understand how I actually got in. Knowing what I know now. So like reflecting on, you know, looking at the work level standards or the integrated leadership system, there's these documents that are out there that you can use, that you can see and you can find online that will show you the kind of things that the applications are looking for. The other thing is really, if they ask you a question, make sure you answer it. One of the things that I heard from a HR person was essentially, they said, the question was, how will your degree be useful to our agency? And people just went on to explain, oh, I have a law degree, means I'm great, essentially. And that's not really what they were looking for. It was like, okay, well, even though I have a law degree and I'm applying to, say, somewhere that has environment or energy perspectives, I understand, I'm able to understand environmental legislation, you know, rather than just saying I have a law degree. So she said that essentially most people got basically cut at the application section because they didn't answer the question properly. And if it provides capabilities or certain key things that they are looking for, make sure that your examples that you're using, whether it's like a group project at uni, whether it's like negotiation or you did some competition or you did a clerkship, make sure that you're using your examples in a really good way. Because again, she was explaining to me that a lot of people were getting cut because their examples weren't really going to their key selection criteria. And they just were kind of saying what the APS calls motherhood statements, which is essentially saying you're really good at something, but not really expanding on why. And so I've really taken that feedback for myself when applying for other jobs, even if it's just to get experience. Because I don't have a lot of experience in applying for jobs. I've only applied for like 6 in my entire life. Which is a bit crazy. And so I'm trying to apply for more just to get that experience.
For people applying, first of all, research the APS values and refer to them in your application and in your interview. They're quite important in terms of, with the interview process, there's a certain scoring thing process where you have to, where you're compared against other applicants. And part of that scoring system is that they do test whether you're aware of the APS values. So definitely be across that. And if they ask you a question that might seem like it's asking about one of the values, make sure you answer that. It may be a good idea to reference those values in your application, but that's up to you. When you're writing your application, be aware of the STAR method.
The STAR method is situation, task, action, and results. So you use your examples and link it to the actual selection criteria throughout that as well.
In relation to STAR or CARS or however you're going to frame it, is to also think about, so at the end of your example, so what? So this was something that we did some interview prep, and this was something that she said really made people stick out. It's so when you think of so what, so you go through your context, your action, your response, and you say so what. So you go, if I could go back and do this again, this is what I would do differently. It actually ticks off one of the items of self-awareness or self-direction in the integrated leadership system. So it's something that people do keep an eye out when they're on interview panels. And she said when people do that, they're usually pushed to the next stage.
In the interview, as Sapphire said, answer a question. If you don't understand the question, ask them to rephrase it. I did that in my interview, and that looked really good on me because it showed that I had an interest in answering their question, but I didn't quite understand it. And by asking them to rephrase it, I was able to answer their question in a much more meaningful way. And it showed that I kind of cared to answer their question. So take your time to answer a question. Like as soon as they ask the question, you don't have to blurt out an answer. Just think about it for a few seconds and then give them an answer. Because that will show you that, you know, that will show the employer that you're going to give them a more considered response. And yeah, you're not just giving them an answer they want to hear. In terms of applying as well, a lot of agencies will look for experience that's relevant to their department. So you might have experience at the top legal firm in Australia. That's great. But if that's not relevant to that department, it's not going to do as well for you as somebody else. So for example, one of the other grads that I was speaking to, they applied to the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they had simply got experience working at an RSL, and that showed an interest in Veterans Affairs. And so the things that you think might not be particularly relevant might be relevant. So think about that. And as everyone always says, tailor your application to the department or to the agency that you're applying for.
Yeah. What's your perspective on clerkships then?
I did not do a clerkship. I did apply to a mid-tier firm. I did get an interview and they did tell me that I could come back for an internship, and then I just didn't. So I wouldn't say that they're the be-all and end-all, and I also wouldn't say that grades are the be-all and end-all, because I am a very average student. I think, though, that what set me apart, not having clerkships and not having, you know, HD average, was the fact that I actually had a lot of volunteering, a lot of really different, like we did obviously have the legal clinic. I did a little stint at legal aid. You know, I went out and found legal kind of roles that I could do for short term that really helped me. But I also had worked at Qantas in their loyalty program. I also did a not-for-profit internship at Social Ventures Australia. I think that, yeah, my differentiation of experience that wasn't traditional clerking top tier law firm or mid tier law firm really set me apart from quite a large number of people. And that was some of the feedback that I got when I actually asked for feedback from my grad roles, because I only applied for three of those. And I got offers from all three. And I, when I had finished and, you know, chosen Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, I asked for feedback and they said, you know, you have a large wealth of experience across multiple different sectors, and that's something that set you apart from other applicants.
In terms of clerkships, I didn't do one either. I didn't have the time to do one. I was doing a lot of summer courses and, you know, working to so I didn't really particularly have the time to do clerkships. I feel like clerkships are particularly important in the private sector. If you're aiming to get, you know, careers in those legal firms and whatnot, it's almost essential, I feel. In government, I don't feel like a lot of weight is given to clerkships. I don't want to confirm that. I don't know for sure. But I feel like they're not treated as the be-all and end-all, for sure. As Sapphire said, a wealth of different experiences would be probably a lot better for government, I feel, because they are looking for well-rounded people. And like I said before, somebody that's relevant to the department. Like in terms of what I did in experience and whatnot. I also did the placement at the legal clinic, and I did a placement at the DPP and at Spark Elmore Lawyers. So I had a bit of variety of government and private. And then I took on a role as a research assistant, which I think that worked really well for me in terms of getting a job at OPC, because it shows like research skills and writing skills, which to them was quite important. But I think for government, having a range of experience, as Sapphire identified, is something that's quite important and something that they'll favour.
So you both did the clinical program at Newcastle. So you both got your diplomas and eventually got admitted. Did your departments pay for your practicing certificates? Are you glad you did the practical program, or do you wish you waited? And because a lot of departments will do one with their legal cohorts together, how do you kind of weigh up on the diploma debate?
For me personally, as soon as I got admitted, and because I was in a legal team, they did pay for my practicing certificate. So that was really helpful. They paid for a second one and then I left. But no hard feelings. That's the good thing. You just keep good relationships with your old sections. And so there was no issue. And if I could go back again, I would do it all exactly the same. I don't think I'd wait. I had a couple of, there was 27 people in my cohort. 10 of them were law students. Only 3 of us had actually done the PLT. And so there was only 3 of us who were eligible for admission. And then 4 of those guys ended up actually doing PLT while they were doing the grad program. But the little annoying part about that was they actually had to wait until the beginning of the second year to do it. So they'd graduated, done 1 year of a grad program, and then they were eligible to actually take study leave and use study assistance to do that. However, none of those guys ended up actually going into a legal role, so they didn't get their practicing certificates after they were admitted. So I think there's definitely a benefit, and especially if you do happen to land in a legal role and you build a really good relationship with them, even if you're going on to do, you know, other policy work, most of the time, if you're going to come back, they'll pay for your practicing certificate.
In terms of the practice program debate, there's pros and cons to both. I would not be able to tell like which one would be better or worse. What I found is helpful is the experience that you get through the practice programs, the various placements. They look really good on a resume. And the skills that you develop through those placements are quite helpful. So in terms of if you did it after your study, sure, you probably will end up doing the same sort of placements and whatnot. So again, like I'm not really sure if it's like beneficial or detrimental. Those are just two options. I would say that it's important to consider your own needs and whether or not doing the practice program on top of your full-time study is healthy for you in terms of your mental health and whatnot. Because I know that some people do struggle with that kind of workload, and if it's going to be too much doing 4 units plus placement courses and then plus placement itself, that's a factor for students to consider. And in terms of the outcome though, I've been admitted and work paid for my admission ceremony, or paid for the admission. I don't need a practicing certificate, which is great. So they don't have to pay for that. It wasn't a factor that they were particularly worried about when they were hiring. So I'm not sure.
I'm curious about what type of roles where you need a practicing certificate. So my understanding is you don't quite need it for policy roles. You can get away with a few legal roles without it. At what point does it kind of tip the edge and you need to get the certificate?
I think it really depends on who your general counsel is. So, for example, I know I have friends who work in the legal team in health and they don't have practicing certificates at all. The National Indigenous Australians Agency General Counsel, they wanted you to have a practicing certificate. That was one of their requirements for their job. In my current role, you're required to have a practicing certificate. It's actually part of your job role and responsibilities. And I know, for example, in Cabinet Division, where the FOI exemptions, I don't know what the specific person, what their role is called, but they are required to have a practicing certificate too. And generally when you're dealing with privacy or FOI, in some cases, most of those people would have practicing certificates, but it really just differs from department to department, and it really depends on who your general counsel is.
From what I've heard, in the departments, it also depends on what the actual legal role is, in terms of, I know that there are some solicitors within departments who are responsible for taking legal action against people who breach that department's laws. So if the Department of Education has a law about, you know, standards of education, and someone were to breach those standards, the department can take action against that person, and the person in the department taking action would have to be a qualified lawyer. So I think it depends on the role. In terms of my role, we do have an ongoing requirement for continuing legal education. So the same sort of requirements that you have under a practicing certificate, we have as part of our role requirements, and I have to satisfy those every year, similar to what you would have to satisfy if you were to get a practicing certificate. So I think it very, very much depends on the department and the role, and it's not straightforward from the outset or anything.
Did you have any final comments, final bits of advice for any of first years, any students listening that we might not have touched on? Yeah, any further comments?
Pay attention to statutory interpretation. I don't know, it's cool working for the government, my day will consist of, you know, calling someone from the Department of Health or Education or Prime Minister and Cabinet, or, you know, I could be speaking to someone from the Clean Energy Regulator or something like that on about a bill. And it is cool to see how government works and how it keeps the country running. So I enjoy it, and I feel like a lot of the first year and other students would enjoy it too.
I would say, just enjoy your time at uni. Again, I'm going to echo the mental health. Like, if you need a break, you need a break. Make sure you listen. And you don't burn out. Don't try and do too much. I was a sucker for trying to do too much. I was trying to volunteer in all these things, do these internships. And honestly, third year contracts, I nearly quit. So I think just look after yourself. I'm going to echo, definitely pay attention to statutory interpretation. I mean, do a little course if you can online somewhere, just even as a refresher before you go into a role. And yeah, working for the government, it can be really, really interesting, really, really confusing sometimes, because you just really don't know what's going on, because you haven't really paid much attention to, you know, what's in the budget or whatever. But yeah, if anyone really needs anything or wants any help with their applications or just want to have a chat, I'm always available. People are always calling me and having chats with me about which jobs to apply for and if I have any tips. And I've got lots of friends at different departments, so I have some insider scoops if anyone needs.
It's important to seek out that help from people who have been through it, and that reassurance that you are good enough, I think, as a Newcastle student. I think we come out with a bit of a chip on our shoulders about not being a GOA university and being from a regional town. But I think that's also a beneficial attitude and approach that makes us desirable grads as well.
There's a lot of us in Canberra, which I didn't think there was, but like every fourth person that I've met now is a Newcastle graduate. It might not be in law, it could be in accounting or engineering, but we're all down here.
I'd echo that. OPC only has 100 staff and 5 of us are from Newcastle.
So thank you for listening to the Careers in Government podcast today. It's been a pleasure to have you too. Thank you so much for all the advice and wisdom you've given us. So we'll provide in the show notes the LinkedIn handles for you to look up our lovely guests today, to kind of have a look at their career pathways a bit further in depth and some of the skills and who reach out and connect and have further chats with them as desired.